coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
In the desert sand near Nazca on Peru's southern coast, there are mysterious lines. What do they mean? One of the things we'll talk about with our guest Maurice Cotterell in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Maurice Cotterell. Maurice, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about those very mysterious lines of Nazca in Peru. Always have fascinated me. You have highlighted them in the Lost Tomb of the Viracocha. Tell us a little bit about your take on these lines.
When I looked at the decoded pictures from Lord Peykal's tomb in Mexico, I was inspired to go down and investigate the stories of the Viracochas, who, legend has it, walked the lands of South America performing miracles three or four hundred years before Lord Peykal lived in Mexico. And when I got down to Peru, I visited the pyramids at Saipan, where in 1989 the bodies of two men were found, and the archaeologists refer to them as the Lord of Saipan and the Old Lord of Saipan. And they date back to about 300 AD and 400 AD, respectively. And when I started to look at the old stories from the old chronicles, it said that there were two white men, miracle makers, who walked the lands of South America in ancient times, providing miracles, healing the sick with their bare hands, and so on. Again, we had what it seemed to me a repeat of the same old story I'd come across while investigating the previous sun-worshipping civilizations. So what I'd realized with Lord Peykal's information in the Pyramid of Inscriptions, it was clear that Lord Peykal did not want the information to be decoded before the computer arrived, before the advent of the computer in the year 1990 or 2000, in the 20th century. So there was a reason for that. We couldn't decode this information without the computer. So when the computer arrived, I was able to produce the pictures that you now see on the website, but only because the computer was available to help me. In the same way, it seemed to me that the lines of Nazca would never be discovered until we had aircraft to fly above the lines so we could look down on them and we could coherently understand what the pictures were. And the pictures, there are various pictures. One, for example, they're about 50 meters wide and high, they're very long pictures, in the desert basin, are created by the oxidization of pebbles on the basin, which turns the pebbles brown from their naturally white color. And what's happened in the past is somebody scraped away the surface pebbles to reveal the white pebbles underneath. And this is how the line drawings of Nazca were made, by scraping away these lines, raking them away, and revealing patterns underneath. And it's the subject matter of the patterns, the way they were done, and what they are, which tells us who did them and why they were done. For example, there's a large picture of a monkey holding over what looks like three pyramids, and one of the fingers of the monkey's hand is missing. Now, monkey was an ancient symbol for sun-worshipping civilizations, which represented a means of communication, talking, writing, and so on. The same happened with Happy the baboon in Egypt and so on.
Right.
So we're told immediately that this is a form of early writing.
Now, didn't Eric von Däniken, though, claim that, like you just said, planes, I think he claims that it was made for extraterrestrial visitations.
Well, of course he did, but extraterrestrial or otherwise, you've still got to be above them in order to see them.
That's true.
And that's the point I'd like to raise. Now, some of the pictures were of birds with long necks like snakes. So here again, we had the feathered snake, just as we had with Tutankhamun, just as we had with Lord Peykal and all the other civilizations of China. We had the dragon, which is a combination of a bird, a snake, and a stag. It's the same metaphor again, and there's a reason why they use these metaphors. Other pictures showed, for example, the frigate bird. And the frigate bird is a bird which puffs off its pouch beneath its chest, on its chest, when it's mating, only when it's mating. So the frigate bird, the presence of the frigate bird, showed us that somebody wanted to tell us about fertility. There was another picture of a spider, and a particular type of spider, which has its genitalia on the end of a long extension on a sac, and the ranicula, the spider's called. And again, it teaches us about fertility on Earth. So we have, already we have two common factors here. We have the oxidization of the pebbles, which is caused by ultraviolet light. That tells us about the sun. We have the feathered snake, which tells us about Lord Peikal, the feathered snake, the perfect being, spirit and body. And we have fertility. And we have more pictures of fertility in Nazca. We have whales and killer whales showing the birth of baby whales. We have the hummingbird, a picture of a hummingbird. And the hummingbird is the only bird which can fly forwards and backwards. In other words, it goes forwards and backwards in time. Just as human beings go forward and backwards in time, they are reincarnated. This is what the ancients believe. There's a large picture of a labyrinth, and the labyrinth is constructed from its initial stages from a simple cross, a Christian cross, with a few dots around it, and you can construct a labyrinth. All this is explained in the Lost Tomb of Viracocha. So the information tells us again that it's the same information, how the sun affects life on Earth, how it controls fertility, how the feathered snake is important. And clearly, Viracocha means foam of the sea. So I considered, why did they say that this guy in the pyramid, one of them was called Viracocha, mm-hmm. the other one was called Viracocha Pachacamac, which means God of the World. Why would they say this? And in fact, in one of those tombs, the occupant of the tomb is shown as a 2-foot anthropomorphic creature of half crab, half man. It's a crab with a man's face. Now, why would they show themselves like this? So I considered the possibilities. And it seemed to me that when we are in the foam of the sea, paddling in the ocean with our Wellingtons on, our rubber boots on, then that's the only moment that we're in touch with all of the elements, the earth, the air, the fire, the water. For example, if we go towards the water, we lose contact with the earth. And if we step onto the beach, we lose contact with the water. So it seemed to me that the perfect being had the sunshine in his face, the wind in his hair, the water above his feet, and the earth beneath his feet. So the perfect being lived in the foam of the sea.
Or it was a visitation and they were trying to draw whatever it looked like. Possible?
The information doesn't support that.
Okay.
Because as we look at the foam of the sea and the notion of Viracocha, for example, who comes from heaven, this heavenly being, who it is a visitation, I looked at Revelation again to see if, again, it could shed any light on it. And Revelation chapter 10 says, I saw an angel with a rainbow on his head and the sun, as it were, across his face, with 1 foot on the sand and 1 foot in the sea. Now, that must have been Viracocha because he's in the foam of the sea, 1 foot on the sand, 1 foot in the sea. And they're trying to tell us, if you look at the picture of Viracocha from the tomb reconstructed by archaeologists, what they've done is they opened the coffins in the pyramids, they took all the clothes and jewelry and treasures out of it, and they reconstructed Viracocha Pachacamac, the foam of the sea, if you like, this guy who is a miracle maker. And it's exactly the same picture as one of the decoded pictures of Lord Peikal from his coffin lid. And it's on the website. It's the one with 144,000 written on his forehead.
Right.
And it tells us that he was one of the 144,000. He lived in the foam of the sea. He was the perfect being. And Revelation tells us that it was the same guy as Jesus again in the Bible. So again, we get this common thread of this reappearance of this spiritual leader.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling, isn't it? It's
absolutely mind-boggling. And so when I did a book called The Super Gods, this was in 1997, I suggested that Krishna, which was the Hindu god, and the Hindus believe the cow is sacred because the cow gives milk. It's the milky ocean. It's the foam of the sea. This is why they revere the cow. They don't kill it. Krishna means the anointed one in Greek. Now, Krishna was the ninth incarnation of Shiva, and Shiva was, in turn, one of the Indian Holy Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So what we have there is Krishna was the first god that we know of that came down to earth. And Krishna, the anointed one, is the same as Christ or Christos, which again means to be baptized. Now, the Hindus believe that Buddha was the eighth incarnation of Krishna on earth. Now, Krishna was associated with a Garuda bird, which is an eagle, and the serpent of infinity, Anatta. That means that Krishna was associated with a feathered snake. And they say he will come back again in the next age as the god Kalki. Now, again, when Krishna was born, a bright star was seen in the sky. And as I started to put all of this information together, what all of these religious leaders, Krishna, Tutankhamun, Buddha, Qinshi Huangdi of the Chinese, Jesus, Viracocha, Viracocha Pachacamac, Lord Paykal of the Maya, they were all born when a bright star was seen in the sky. They were all born through an immaculate conception. When they were alive, they all performed miracles. When they died, they all became Venus. Without an exception, every single one of them. We know it's not the same guy because there are different bones and different coffins, which means it's the same guy keeps coming back. We touched on earlier the fact that the reason they encoded the information was so that when they reincarnated, because they had a new heart with no emotional memory, and because they had a new CD-ROM in their head, a new brain with no intellectual memory, all their knowledge of the sun in thousands of years' time would all have to be learned again, because in between times, the Earth would be destroyed every few thousand years.
See, that concerns me, Maurice, that maybe we're in one of those cycles now.
Well, going back to the 2012 date that we touched on earlier, I examined that date, and what I found was that if you look at the Mayan cycles, I had a tremendous experience in, just deviating slightly, in 1993, I was having a problem with a publisher, and they were giving me a real hard time, and it was interfering with my work. So I went to see a clairvoyant in Plymouth in England when I was living there. It was one of these sort of traveling get-togethers where clairvoyants and psychics get together and they visit different hotels around the country.
Okay, I've seen that, sure.
Okay. And I went down there. My wife had never been, so I took her with me. I said, let's go early on a Sunday. It was July the 4th. I'll never forget it, Independence Day, American Independence Day. So she was excited. She'd never been to one before. We went into the hall, and it was empty because everyone was still in bed at noon on a Sunday,
yeah,
on a summer's day.
They call them psychic fairs.
Psychic fairs.
Yeah.
And I walked around a couple of times until I met somebody I felt comfortable, and I sat down. She said, you're going through a hard time right now. Somebody's trying to steal your book.
Come on, right out of that. She said that right away?
I swear to you, I've got it on tape, and I've got a transcript of the tape. My wife was there. Within minutes, she was in tears. She said, you've been sent to decode ancient manuscripts. I see people on the other side of the world with dark skin, with short, straight, dark hair. And there's a man standing behind you, and he's got very, very bright eyes. And he's telling me, he wants you to count. I don't know why. I don't understand it. He wants you to count. He wants you to go 1-1-1-1-1, 2-2-2-2-2, 3-3-3-3-3. I don't know why. That's what he's telling me. I can see a picture of him. Does he live in a tent? I've got a picture here of a tent, like a triangular building, a triangular door. The door to the tomb at Palenque is triangular. He said, I've got a picture of a man, and he's got ribbons on his head. The picture of Lord Paykal on the website shows him with ribbons on his head, four ribbons representing the north, the south, the west, and the east. I went home after that. I'd been trying to decode the 2012 date and what it could mean. And I knew that the Mayas used cycles to represent time. They didn't use weeks and months and years like we did. They used cycles of 20 days, 260 days, 360 days, 7,200 days, and 144,000 days. The number from the Bible.
Isn't that interesting?
And I wrote them down in a line. And I put underneath each number 1-1-1-1-1. So there was 1 under 144,000, 1 under 7,200, 1 under 360, 1 under 260, 1 under 20. And I wrote them down in columns. 2-2-2-2-2, 3-3-3-3-3. I got to 9-9-9-9-9. I said, well, I can't go any higher. So I added them up, 9 multiplied by 144,000, plus 9 multiplied by 7,200, plus 9 multiplied by 360, plus 9 multiplied by 260, plus 9 times 20 equals the Mayan super number, 1366560, the rebirth of Venus, the rebirth of Jesus.
How in the heck did you come across putting that together?
Because they told me to.
My gosh.
She said, they want you to count. And then I went back and I thought, this rebirth of Venus is telling me about the rebirth of Venus toppling on its axis.
But it's also
telling me that Lord Paykal was the rebirth of Venus. He was the rebirth of Jesus, the bright and morning star.
Now, is this going to happen again, though, Maurice?
Now, I analyzed the cycles further. The cycles actually stop at 144,000 because that's the most important number of those who are going to go to heaven. And there is a very high number, more than the 1366560 number, and it's a lot more. It's actually 13 times bigger than 144,000. It's 1872000 days, which is 5,012 years. It's the biggest number that's ever been found on a Mayan monument, and there's about a dozen of these. It seems that the counting stopped at that time.
Same number, though?
Sorry?
That number's the same on all these other monuments?
It's the biggest number that they've found. It's exactly the same number.
All right.
So people have suggested, well, if the number stops there, then maybe the world stops there because they've got no need to count any more days. But that's purely conjecture, as I have found. It seems to me the message, it became clear, wasn't the astrophysics message. That was just to tell me how clever they were. They knew the sun affected the DNA. They knew that the sun affected behavior. They knew that the sun affected the navigation of the pigeon. They knew all of these things. They understood reincarnation. They were trying to get over a spiritual message, but they would not let anybody decode these pictures who may have believed them to be nice, pretty pictures, because they don't want the pictures to be revered. They want the knowledge to be revered. And only the guy who understands the sun, who understands physics, who understands God and how the soul works, and which we haven't even touched on yet this evening, they wanted the right guy to decode this stuff, because if the wrong guy decoded it for the wrong reasons, the wrong message would be conveyed.
And they wanted to decode it around this time period.
They wanted us to decode it around this time period. So getting back to 2012, is anything going to happen? All I can say is there is no evidence of any magnetic upheaval. But what happened was in 627 AD, we know the Earth did not tilt on its axis. What that means now is that there was a magnetic reversal in 627 AD, so the Earth's magnetic field and the Sun's are now at different angles. What that means is we're going to have stresses on the magma to come back into line inside the Earth. We're going to get eddy currents which generate heat. The pressure within the Earth is going to increase. The temperature of the Earth's surface will increase, and this could cause the blowing of supervolcanoes.
Right.
It could cause tectonic activity and so on. We just don't know. The fact is, these people were a lot cleverer than we are. We're only licking their boots at the moment.
All right, but we can predict by 2012 some severe Earth changes, no doubt.
No, we can't, George. You see, what I found was, I looked at the date, I divided it by all of the known magnetic cycles that I discovered, and all I found was that it corresponded with 7.4 sunspot cycles, long-term sunspot cycles. So I thought, well, why tell me of a cycle which is only part of a cycle? Clearly, 7.4 is only 0.4 of a cycle. And in order to get rid of the 0.4, I had to multiply that number by 5 to give me 2.0. Now, when I did that, I had 37 sunspot cycles, which means it could well have been a cycle because it was 0.0. It was the end of something. And when I calculated that, all it told me was it gave me a date of about 25,900 years. So it seemed to me, by giving us the number, they were trying to tell us about precession. And that's my conclusion I reached in the Mayan prophecies, that the ancients used the 2012 figure so that the guy who figured all this out would say, well, hang on a minute, it's not a cycle. What do we have to do to make it a cycle? We therefore come up with a figure which represents something we understand, precession, the way the Earth slowly wobbles on its axis. And so by doing that, they were drawing our attention to wobbling on our axis, which is all about pole tilting. And if you go back to Tiwanaku, on the gateway of the sun, Viracocha stands at the gateway, and he tells us a story of how the Earth has been destroyed on four previous occasions.
Pick that up when we come right back, Maurice, how the Earth has been destroyed by four previous occasions. And also we'll talk about the soul, and then next hour, your phone calls.
Get it in writing with the After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505. City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, the Caring People at Children International are so delighted with you, the support from Coast to Coast listeners. They had asked for 100 children to be sponsored, and already, and the campaign shall end for a little bit in a couple days, we've got 160 sponsored. $18 a month, that's it. I'm sponsoring a child named Maritza, a little five-year-old from Guatemala, by the way. However, I've decided I would like a little bit more sponsorship, so I need 40 of you by the end of today or tomorrow to sponsor a child. If you haven't already, and if you can afford this, go to my website, coasttocoastam.com. On the left-hand side, you'll see the yellow flashing banner. You can sponsor a child. And let me tell you something, just some of the emails I've gotten over the last couple of weeks, people are just, it's changed their life already. I mean, there are some people without children who are sponsoring a child, and they feel as if this is their kid. I mean, they love it. So you can go to the website, the yellow flashing banner, coasttocoastam.com. It's on the left-hand side. Or call this toll-free number if you don't have a computer, 1-800-869-9863, 1-800-869-9863. The next day or two, I need 40 of you to just sponsor a child. That'll push us to 200, and I'll be happy with that. But if the campaign's not over by then, I'll have to push for a little bit more, won't I? Maurice Cutterell, our guest right here on Coast to Coast. His website, I'll spell it for you, MauriceCutterell.com. Linked up with his name, that's the easy way, at coasttocoastam.com. Four previous destructions of what, civilizations on this planet, Maurice, or events on this planet?
Destruction of all living things at the time they occurred. Now, what I did when I calculated the cyclicity of the magnetic variables on the sun's surface, I realized that there was a 3,740-year cycle corresponding to the number worshipped by the Maya. But this was part of a longer cycle of 18,169 years, during which time the sun's magnetic field reverses five times. So we're in the fifth age of the sun right now in the 18,000-year cycle. Now, I believe we're in the fifth cycle because the Aztec calendar tells us of the four previous cycles that were destroyed through earth, volcanic lava, fire, sunspots, the age of the Jaguar, when the sun destroyed the earth, and so on. And if we go to Tiwanaku, the carving of Viracocha on the Gateway of the Sun tells us about the four previous ages and how the Earth has been destroyed in those four previous ages. And they believe that we were now living in the fifth and final age of the Sun. So, which brings us back to the 2012 figure, George, because in the books of Chilam Balam, it says that after 260 katons, or 260 bakhtan cycles of 7,200 days, that's exactly the same as 13 katon cycles of 144,000. Then after that period of time, 1872000 days, that this has led to the belief that the world might be coming to an end again in the fifth age. But as I say, there is no scientific evidence to suggest that at the moment. But of course, it could be that they were much more clever than we are at this time.
Well, they seem to be pretty accurate, though, Maurice. That's what concerns me.
Oh, not only accurate, but miraculously so. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. Once you start to look at the pictures and look at the miracles they left behind, it's all absolutely fascinating. And the fact that we are destroyed doesn't matter anyway, because they were trying to leave the message that we will come back to Earth. They were trying to tell us why we're born, why we die, and why this has to be. And this is why this spiritual salesman, this spiritual recruiting executive, the super gods, I call them, Krishna, I'll give you them again, Krishna, Tutankhamun, Buddha, Qin Shi Huangdi, Jesus, Lord Paikal, the Viracochas, and so on. This is why they come periodically to the planet to teach us about the higher orders of spirituality so that we can all go to heaven. And this brings us back to, just before the break, you mentioned that we would talk about the soul.
Absolutely.
And one of the interesting things from all of this research to me is, you don't have to look very far as long as you look and as long as you have humility. You don't have to be clever. In fact, the last thing you need is brains to decode this stuff. All you need to do is love. And if you love God and love your neighbor, all of this information will become clear. Now, what that means is all the information is there to be found. You just have to look in the right place. Now, there are far cleverer people than I am who have looked at this stuff before.
I'm not sure that they're cleverer than you, Maurice.
Oh, but they are. It's just that you don't have to be clever to find the information. You have to stand back and say, I am not clever, I am stupid. Once you say that and admit it, and you take the sins of the world upon you, then the light comes on, and you can see what's in the room. But until that light is switched on, you live in the darkness. And this is exactly what's happened with all of the teachings from all of the ancient religions. All of the ancient religions were led by the same spiritual energy, the Son of God. There's only one Son of God, but he's been here at least five or six times. In fact, there are more times than that, but we don't want to complicate the picture.
What an unbelievably powerful soul that must be.
Absolutely.
For that entity to come back so many times.
Absolutely. And it's absolutely wonderful. And once we start to look at the evidence, earlier we recognized that the divorce of ownership from control inspired the Industrial Revolution, and the divorce of hardware from software enabled a different understanding of the human body. Now, the human body has four bodies, actually. It has a physical body, it has an intellectual body, an emotional body, and a spiritual body. And these four bodies exist in different dimensions. For example, in the physical world, if you have a dollar and I have a dollar and we exchange them, we finish up with $1 each. We can't get something for nothing. In the intellectual world, though, that's the world of the mind, it's not quite so straightforward, because if I have an idea and you have an idea and we exchange them, we finish up with two ideas each. We can double our intellectual wealth at no cost. Now, if I love you, the scriptures tell me that somehow my heart becomes pure. And what we find is that all of these spiritual teachers teach us that if we love our neighbor, then our soul voltage will grow. Now, I say voltage because, again, if you open the Bible, it says God is light. If you open the Bhagavad Gita, the Indian scriptures, it says God is light. Well, you don't have to be clever. We're told that light is electromagnetic energy in the 20th and 21st century. We've got that far. We've come this far. So we know what light is, electromagnetic energy. And Einstein told us in 1920, E equals mc squared. Energy equals mass multiplied by the speed of light. Now, if God is light and God is energy, and in the beginning there was only God, then in the beginning, God must have sacrificed some of himself. He must have sacrificed some of his energy to create the physical world mass. Now, what happened there?
Okay, now explain that a little bit. Almost like he gave up a portion of whatever.
Yeah. Well, in the Bible, it tells us that God made man in his own image.
Right.
And what we notice about men is that we can only grow to a certain size. And we can only get bigger if we throw a piece of ourselves away. In other words, I can only be 6 feet tall, but if I throw my sperm away, I can create some more cells in my own image. And those cells can create more cells, but only if I throw a piece of myself away, that sperm. The same goes for a woman. If she throws an egg away, she can grow beyond 6 feet tall. The same for an apple tree. The only known mechanism for growth beyond a given limit in the physical world is through sacrifice. We have to throw a piece of ourselves away in order to create more.
What was it that these ancients, Maurice, knew? And I'm talking about all of them, the Egyptians, the Mayans, the Incas, all of them, the Chinese. Why did they know what they knew thousands and thousands of years ago, and we can't, other than decoding and works by people like you? Why aren't we as abreast on what's going on as they were? I mean, we're the ones with all this scientific technology and all. I just don't understand why we're so behind them.
Well, the key to this is not scientific technology. We've had that for a long time. It's like looking for intelligent people to try to decode this work. They won't do it because they're driven by ego and vanity and so on. Science has not changed. Man has always been scientifically inquiring, but man has always killed each other. So the purpose of being on this earth is not to inquire scientifically and make scientific leaps, although those leaps can, in turn, help us understand our own being, for example, the computer and so on, separating the intellect from the emotion from the spirit. Don't forget, when you switch a computer off, you take away the electromagnetic energy. You take God away from the computer and it dies. You switch off the screen and it goes dead. You take away our soul, it goes dead, like a dead computer. And you put the energy back into your computer, it comes back to life again. And the soul, when it leaves the body, if the voltage has increased, then it will come back to a higher voltage body next time, which is better fed, better bred, and more intelligent. It will have higher thought processing, and maybe next time it can get to heaven. And what the ancients did was they thought, well, hang on a minute, it's very, very difficult to get to heaven. It's taken us thousands of years since the last catastrophe to invent the computer, to invent the aeroplane, to invent all these things. You know, if I come back and we don't have a computer, I'm not going to get any help to get to heaven next time. And what we realize is, once we go back to E equals MC squared, if the physical universe began when God, energy, threw a piece of himself into the void, it crossed the equation and became mass. But when it crossed the equation, it changed its sign. In other words, plus energy, take it across the equation, becomes minus mass. That works for any algebra equation. So what we find is the mass, that is the planets, the stars, the birds, the trees, the computers, the trucks, everything, the mass, everything which is physical, is the opposite. It's the opposite charge of what created it. So if God is in heaven, all of the mass must be in hell. So this world we see around us must be hell. It's got to be. It's the opposite of God. Plus, E equals MC squared. Either that or Einstein's equation is invalid. Once we realize that we're in hell, we've got to escape, because nobody wants to be in hell, because we keep coming back and keep suffering. It's very painful. Doesn't matter if you're a king or a princess, life is still hell. Doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, life is hell, because this is hell. And everything in hell is the opposite of God, which means everything in hell is the devil, which means human bodies, plants, computers, railway trucks, they're all the devil. Everything which is physical is the devil. It has to be. There are no two ways about it. Now, what happens is we get evolution. I mean, Charles Darwin wasn't wrong because he didn't have this information. He did the best he could at the time, like Velikovsky. And Darwin said we started off with very simple cells, and the cells progressed to more complex structures. Those structures then became chimpanzees and human beings and so on. Now, if we look at that in a different way, what happened was those simple cells began to generate electrical systems from the very simple single-cell creatures like amoeba to algae to spirogyra to jellyfish to armored fish to dragonflies and so on. We began to evolve in time. And as the human brain evolved, it reaches a certain voltage in the womb, which is opposite the voltage of God. So if the voltage of the brain in the human fetus reaches, for example, -5 volts, it tries to drag +5 volts from somewhere. But there is no +5 volts in hell. The only +5 volts is on the opposite side of Einstein's equation, which is in heaven. So that fetus drags 5 volts off God. A bubble of electromagnetic energy attaches to the -5 volt baby, and the baby becomes a human being, which is half God, +5 volts, half the devil, -5 volts. And we are human now. And we live in this body for 70 years. If I love you, my voltage goes up. If I hate you, my voltage goes down.
That's the negativity in people then.
That is, yes.
Why the code, Maurice? Why hide this, hoping for someone like you to decode it? Why not just come straight and just lay it right out for everybody?
As I mentioned earlier, there are several reasons, actually. There is the pragmatic reasons for encoding it. It has to survive 3,000 years until you're reborn next time, for example. So it needs to be kept in a safe place, like a pyramid, which is nice and warm and dry, and safe from the volcanic eruptions and so on. That's one reason. It needs to be encoded so that it's a common language, so that if you come back in a different land, you can understand the pictures and the numbers, because we all have 10 fingers, so we all count up to 10. Even when the world's destroyed, we come back and we crawl around for a few thousand years. Eventually, we stand upright and we start to count again as we become more intelligent. But there's also another reason. If people understood this knowledge, all the bad guys would start going to heaven. For example, if I love you, I can send myself to heaven. You can't do anything to me. You know, you can't affect the destination of my soul in any way. As long as I love you, my voltage will go up. When it goes up, I will go back to God, and God will have grown because I go back to him. And God wants to grow because he's good and God is love. So more God is more good, which is more love. So the universe is a better place to be. So the whole purpose of the universe is for God to get himself to grow. And the only way he can grow is to sacrifice himself into humanity. Humanity provides a biological conduit which enables the growth of voltage, which enables God in turn to grow. But he doesn't want negative voltage going back to God, because God would get smaller and the universe would become a worse place. So God makes sure that only good souls go to heaven. Now, once you understand all this knowledge, for example, I could get you to hate me. Because if you hated me, I would suffer. If I suffer, my heart becomes pure. If my heart becomes pure, my soul voltage increases, and I go to heaven. But if I get you, George, to hate me, I can send you to hell. Because your soul voltage will go down, and you'll come back to earth again as a lesser creature, to a lower voltage dog or a worm or whatever. And this is what the Maya believed was illusion. Maya is an ancient Sanskrit word. It means illusion. They believe that everything we see around us is illusion. And let me explain. If you hold a flower in your hand, it looks like a flower, it smells like a flower, it would taste like a flower. But it's only a flower at that moment in time. In a week's time or 2 weeks' time, the cells will begin to die. The biological structure will begin to decay. As the biological structure decays, the electromagnetic energy that's attached to that flower will be released. The soul of the flower will move on and become a worm or a dog or a human being. It's only a flower in disguise. It's God in disguise. Every living thing is God in disguise. That means if you kill something, you're killing God. You know, if a dog barks and I want to kill it, I can't kill a dog because God's in the dog. And if I kill God, he won't be very happy. So no. Once we start to get our head around why they believe this life was illusion, what the soul is, how we can increase and decrease the voltage, you've got to protect this information so that bad people don't get hold of it. Now, only those who really search for the answer will find it. It says in the Bible, knock and the door will be opened. Ask and you shall receive. This isn't talking about $100,000 a year. It's talking about knowledge. Ask for the knowledge, it will be given to you. When I saw the psychic in 93, she said, whenever you have a problem, hold out your hands and say, I'm ready for it. Give me the knowledge. I said, why are they holding me up? I seem to race ahead for a year. Then I come to a grinding halt, and nothing happens. She said, you've got to calm down. You're going too quickly. This stuff is too powerful. It will blow your brains to pieces. You must do one step at a time. Go back. Check this stuff. Make sure it's right. They're telling me you've got to check it. Do you understand?
Of course, Maurice. And the work you've done, I think, is just phenomenal. Absolutely stunning. You know, when we come back next hour, I want to take phone calls, but I've always wanted to talk to you about those terracotta warriors in China. There's 8,000 of them, right?
That's right.
I mean, are they man size or are they?
They're life size. They weigh about half a ton each.
There's a purpose for that too, I'm sure, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we will do that, and we'll take phone calls, so get ready for that with Maurice Cotterell. Number of books. Maurice, where do you get the books? How do people find them?
They can get them off Amazon. That's the easiest way. They're all on sale in America and in the UK and in many other languages. In fact, I'm pleased to report that The Terracotta Warriors has been published by Peking University Press in China in Chinese. So we've got 1 billion Chinese all looking at it now, and they're very pleased with it. But Amazon.com... There are a whole series. If you check out the name, it'll give you all of the books which are available, and take your pick.
You got it. You have any favorite of all the ones you've done?
It's been a journey, and what I've tried to do, George, in the books is to ensure that readers understand it, and because of that, I've had to keep them up to date with every book. So in every book, the previous books are condensed at the back. That means that they can understand all of the basics. They don't have to buy all of the books, because I thought that wouldn't be very fair on the reader. But they've all got different aspects, and they've all got something different to offer.
All right.
And each one is concerned with a different civilization. So it depends on which particular civilization turns them on at this particular time.
Superb job. We'll be back. We'll take phone calls with our guest, Maurice Cotterell, and we'll talk about the Terracotta Warriors on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.